This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. You can now watch our TV show on Free Speech TV every weekday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. FSTV is on Dish Network, DirecTV, and Roku. Monday is considered Columbus Day around the country and has been a federal holiday since 1937. U.S. history books claim that it, quote, commemorates the landing of Christopher Columbus in the New World on October 12th, 1492. The claim is odd considering that Christopher Columbus, a man some consider an explorer and others a rapist, never actually set foot in North America. But the symbolism of a Western European arriving in the United States is a historical marker for settler colonialism of North American lands, the massive project of Manifest Destiny, and the genocide of native peoples. Well, about a dozen cities around the country have officially adopted Indigenous Peoples Day instead of Columbus Day. And for years now, the city of Denver, Colorado has been a focal point for a battle over Columbus Day. Indigenous activists led by the American Indian Movement have confronted and challenged the annual Denver Columbus Day parade. This year, however, the march and its counter-protest will be held in the context of a recent Denver City Council vote of 12-0 to change Columbus Day to Indigenous Peoples Day. My guest is Sky Roosevelt Morris. She's a member of the Leadership Council of the American Indian Movement of Colorado, and she's with the Shawnee and White Mountain Apache Nations, and also a graduate student at the University of Colorado in Denver. Welcome to the program, Sky.
Thank you, Sonali. It's good to be here.
So first, let's talk about what happened at the Denver City Council just earlier this week or within the past few days for there to be a 12-0 vote. Pretty remarkable. I understand last year there was a sort of one-time proclamation, but that a vote this year essentially now means that Denver joins something like 14 or so cities around the country that have adopted the second Monday in October as Indigenous Peoples Day. Is that a huge victory?
Yes, it is. And I just want to put some points out of clarification about that. The city of Denver itself never celebrated Columbus Day. We've been really pushing for the repeal of Columbus Day on the state level. And so on one hand, you know, this is a very celebratory moment for us in the struggle to abolish Columbus Day and to abolish racist icons and symbols in our society. I think we still have some work to do. So when they passed that resolution on Monday evening, put forward by Paul Lopez, the city, as I said, will now celebrate Indigenous Peoples Day, but the state of Colorado is still acknowledging Columbus Day. And so Columbus Day still hasn't been repealed on the state level, which is where, and furthermore on the national level, where it needs to.
So what I should have said is that the city council had a vote to name the second Monday in October as Indigenous Peoples Day because it never had officially called it Columbus Day to begin with. It is a federal holiday. However, this Italian-American communities in the city have an annual parade. So let's talk about how this idea of Columbus Day, whether it's, you know, in a city that actually officially marks it or not, has been seen, at least by some Italian-American groups, as a source of Italian pride. And they cite historical racialized oppression of Italians, when Italians were really new immigrants to the U.S., as a reason for why Columbus Day is really important to them. How do you respond to that?
Well, I would say that, well, at least especially in the state of Colorado and in our communities here in Denver and down south in Pueblo, because Columbus Day was founded as a national holiday here in Denver in 1907. And before that, it was put forth in 1905 by Italian Americans down in Pueblo. And so this is kind of the birthplace of this holiday. And the people that had put it forth, the Italian Americans that had put it forth, were part of the Knights of Columbus, which actually was an organization that was started by Irish Americans or Irish immigrants to kind of blend in and assimilate with American society when they first started coming over. And so there's kind of this fallacy about the history of Columbus and some of the organizations that have used Columbus in a way to push forth a certain kind of agenda. And so I just feel that there's a lot of misrepresentation going on here within even the Italian American community, and that, and furthermore, I don't think that this issue is between Indians and Italians that's been, you know, kind of broadcasted throughout our history in this struggle, is that it's Italians versus Indians, and that's not what we're saying. If they wanted to change this holiday and say and call it, you know, Italian Pride Day, you know, or Italian History Day, we would be fine with that, and we've told them that on a number of occasions. The problem we have is the celebration of a genocidal maniac such as Christopher Columbus.
What does Columbus mean to you? Genocidal maniac is a pretty strong term. And I mentioned he never actually set foot in North America. And I should also say Columbus Day is marked in Latin America in a different way as well, differently to the US. How do you and your family, I know your family is, the entire family has been involved in the struggle in Denver, your community, how do you view Christopher Columbus?
I think, like you said, you know, he's just one man, but the legacy of Columbus and what we have really recently and throughout the past couple of years have really tied what Columbus's legacy is truly about is the doctrine of Christian discovery and domination. And I've had the pleasure of getting to know and collaborate with Stephen Newcomb, who has written an excessive amount on the doctrine of Christian discovery and domination, and he just recently came out with a documentary about it. And we think that that is really what, when we talk about Columbus and we talk about his legacy, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about the legal justification that has come from Europe in order to displace and commit heinous acts against indigenous peoples from Turtle Island, as well as in the Caribbean. Obviously, millions of and upon millions of indigenous people have been massacred since Columbus arrived in 1492. And of course, they needed at some point to be able to legally justify that. And so if you refer to Robert Williams Jr.'s book, American Indian and Western Legal Thought, he does a very wonderful job of eloquently describing, you know, since the arrival of Europeans, how they have been able to justify, whether it's through federal Indian law, whether it's through constitutional law, or whether it's now through international law, how these things and how Columbus's legacy of like eminent domain, the papal bulls, have been able to displace us from our land and essentially say that we are not human beings, that we do not possess rights, as either individuals or as collective rights, as indigenous peoples. And so Columbus, to many of us, represents this ongoing struggle that we are trying to reverse being invisibilized, as my uncle Glenn Morris talks about pretty frequently. And so Columbus is trying to invisibilize us. He's trying to invisibilize our history. And so we're that counter. We're constantly trying to tell people, no, this is not the way it was, and this is not the way it is. This is, whether you're looking at Standing Rock, what's going on in Oak Flats, we're still in this struggle to really exercise our right to self-determination. And unfortunately, because of Christopher Columbus and the legal doctrine of that time, which is still used in a lot of federal Indian law cases, we've still, you know, we're still here and we're still fighting that battle against his legacy.
So, Sky, tell us about what the Columbus Day, in quotes, parades have looked like in Denver now for many years, and what the protests against that and the sort of confrontations around it have looked like. I understand, of course, you will have another one of those on Monday as well. But what if those confrontations, what if those kinds of battles look like? Has there been any sort of sense of understanding from the people who celebrate Columbus Day in Denver as to what your grievances are?
Well, to answer your first question about some of the different kinds of clashes that or confrontations that indigenous peoples have had or our allies have had in trying to abolish Columbus Day versus the folks that are in the parade. I mean, the parade to me doesn't really demonstrate any sort of true Italian pride. They, a lot of times in the past, have used Hummers, they've used semi-trucks, they drive Harley-Davidsons down the road. And so how any of that really belongs to, or, you know, really defines Italian pride is truly beyond me. Just because they drive this semi-truck down the, you know, downtown and they post an Italian flag on it, that doesn't make it Italian pride.
So do you see those celebrations more as measures of U.S. patriotism and militarism instead?
Yeah, I think that that wouldn't be too far of a stretch to say. You know, it, to me, it's just kind of this narcissistic arrogance when those guys parade down the street, because there isn't a whole lot of Italian pride as far as I can tell. And as far as the confrontation goes on our end of it, you know, we've done a variety of different tactics. We've used 30 plus different tactics over the years, different ways. You know, some years hundreds of people got arrested. Some years only a couple people got arrested. Some years they did die in. Some years they, you know, threw fake blood across the streets. Other years we had, you know, this, like we're having this Saturday, we have a Four Directions All Nations march. One year we had 200 women sitting down in the street to get arrested. One year we had 13 women, which was in symbolic remembrance of when Columbus arrived, he would kill 13 indigenous peoples in a day. And that was to signify Jesus and the 12 apostles. And so we had 13 women one year, you know, tried to reach out to the parade people and give them this declaration, and they walked all over it. And so, you know, we've tried to mediate with them in the past. There have been a number of occasions when we've tried to come to the table in a peaceful way and say, let's have a deep understanding of what's going on here. Let's have a dialogue, and how can we both, you know, compromise and come to some sort of consensus about this. And unfortunately, at this time, we still have not been able to reach that consensus.
So let's talk about what is to happen this year around the parade, but also the event that your organization is putting forward. I understand that you're going to have a speaker with the Standing Rock Sioux tribe join you. This is, of course, the tribe that is at the forefront, the nation that's at the forefront of fighting the battle against the Dakota Access Pipeline, which has become one of the most high-profile battles involving indigenous communities in the U.S.?
Yes. We will have Phyllis Young joining us, and she is not only a member of the Standing Rock Sioux Nation, but she has also been part of the American Indian Movement, probably, I believe, since it started. And she also was with my Uncle Russell Means and other folks who demanded that indigenous peoples in the 70s have a seat at the United Nations, because we believe ourselves to be nations and peoples and not tribes. And so she was also monumental in that work as well. And so we've asked her to come. And she was also, where part of our march this year is honoring one of the elders who walked on earlier this year, Troy Lynn Starr Yellowwood, who was monumental in the Red Earth Women's Alliance, and sisters with Phyllis Young. And so she has agreed to come down, partially, you know, to honor Troy, and partially because of the work that she's been doing up in Standing Rock and the ongoing work in the international arena.
And how important is that that movement in North Dakota that has actually, you know, brought together quite a strong solidarity and coming together of different indigenous nations and groups and communities, but also environmentalists, etc.? It seems to be a really, really powerful movement right now in Denver. Do you see that? Do you view that fight as being really one of the most important ones this year?
Yes, and you know, I think that it's not only this conversation about Miniwachoni, as the Lakota say, water is life. It's also about asserting our rights, our treaty rights as indigenous peoples. And that fight has been long going. I mean, we've said honored the treaties, you know, since the first treaty was signed, and there were 371 treaties that were broken by the United States between the United States and indigenous peoples. And so this is a chance for us to reopen those forums and those dialogues about, you know, that we have rights as indigenous peoples. And folks like Evo Morales down in Bolivia, who came out a few years ago and, you know, had the Declaration on the Rights of Mother Earth. And, you know, we're coming into this time where it's not only human beings that should have rights. The earth has rights. Water should have rights. Air should have rights. Those things that we rely on for our very livelihood have a right to exist. And to privatize them and to only give them to certain kinds of people or people who have money or corporations, I think is just ludicrous. That Standing Rock is a prime example of a struggle for water, of a struggle for our treaty rights, for a struggle for indigenous peoples to really exercise the right to self-determination and freedom. I mean, and this is bringing home, I think, a lot of issues. And you had mentioned environmentalists, and we've had so many people from all walks of life. That the Nation of Islam has come up there. We've had folks from Tibet come up there. So all these people who are in their own struggles, who are fighting for their, you know, rights and their livelihoods in their homelands, they've come to show solidarity because resistance is beautiful and resiliency is beautiful, and those are two things that the earth teaches and shows us every day. And I think indigenous peoples intrinsically have within themselves as well.
Well, Sky, where's a website that people can find out more information about your efforts in Denver and in Colorado as a whole? Because, as you said, the main issue is that the state continues to recognize Columbus Day, as do many other states. Where can people find out more, particularly if in their cities and states they want to sort of take on this kind of battle as well?
As far as here locally, we do have a website, transformcolumbusday.org, and so we're trying to keep that updated and working on that as frequently as we can. And you know, we're in the age of social media, and so we have a Transform Columbus Day Denver page, and that's how a lot of people have also been staying in touch with what's going on in Standing Rock. And if people and folks are interested in the fight of what's going on up in North Dakota, you can go to the Standing Rock Sioux Nation website, and those guys have a GoFundMe page. And you really, I was informed last night at a meeting that we had about Standing Rock, that people need to be conscious of where their money is going to, because there are a lot of GoFundMe sites right now on Standing Rock and on the different camps that are up there right now. And so you just want to make sure that your money, if that's, you know, your showing of solidarity with the struggle up there, is going to the right place. And so, you know, you can donate to Oweaku, which is another organization up there. Deborah Whiteplume is one of the leaders of that organization. And so you'll know that your money is going to either the Sioux Nation or, you know, one of these organizations who has been monumental in that movement. And I would just like to say that women were the ones that started that struggle up in Standing Rock. And there have been women who have been standing up all over in the Haudenosaunee territory, down in Central and South America. Women have been emerging, or re-emerging, I should say, as these leaders and this force to be reckoned against the state. And this collective here in Denver started with four women. And I'm honored to say that I was one of those women, and my sisters, Tessa McLean, Celeste Spink, and Issa Benavides are also. And so four women came together and decided that this was something that needed to continue. And it was women who had initially kind of put the momentum behind this Four Directions All Nations March. And so the time of woman and woman's medicine, water is a woman's energy. And so we can see the time of women is now. And it's just been really beautiful to be a part of that and to celebrate women and all that means.
Well, Sky, I want to thank you so much for joining us today, and good luck to you with your efforts.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, and it was a real honor.
Thank you. Sky Roosevelt Morris is a member of the Leadership Council of the American Indian Movement of Colorado. She's with the Shawnee and White Mountain Apache Nations and also a graduate student at the University of Colorado, Denver. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/RUwithSonali.